public hearing on House Bill 3361.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3361 allows a public employee's retirement system retiree who is employed by either the Legislative Assembly or the Oregon State Police for a regular or special session to be employed for all or any part of session without affecting their status as a retired member. There's an emergency clause in the measure effective on passage, and there's no fiscal or revenue impact.
All right, and I have Representative Witt and Judy Signet here to testify. Representative Shields, we're going to do yours next. I wanted to get going.
Thank you.
Representative, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Brad Witt, state representative from House District 31, before you this afternoon to speak in favor of House Bill 3361. Very simple bill. A lot simpler than the last one that I spoke about when I was before this committee. This one, very straightforward. If you look at the very end of the bill, you'll see all of the changes proposed here. And the bill would allow us as legislators to be able to hire retirees in the PERS system and not have our staff suffer adverse consequences to their retirement. The same would be true for retired state police who work here in the building during the session. I think this would be extremely advantageous. I know it's been advantageous for me. My staff member appearing with me here today, Judy Signet, is a veteran of 11 sessions of this state legislature. And I can tell you that it would make things a lot easier if her PERS system was not adversely impacted by my hiring her. We gain the benefit of years and years of experience being able to have retired members in the system serve here in the legislature, both as legislative staff. Also,
Brad, Representative, I'm going to open a subcommittee on the House Committee.
There we go, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And the same would be true of the state police, who are sitting in the hearing rooms virtually every single hearing throughout this day. We benefit from their experience. We benefit from the fact that these folks have been public servants for a good number of years, have had all those years of experience here in the state capitol, know the public, know the players, know the system, know how to best help us. It certainly would be a win-win, I think, all the way around. Last thing I want to say, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, those of us who serve as legislative members, we have the very same kind of exclusion that I'm proposing here for our staff members and for the state police. And I got to tell you, Mr. Chairman, I truly believe it's good for the goose, it ought to be good for the gander. If it's good enough for us, it ought to be good for the people that we hire here to do the work that gets carried on in this building day in and day out. With that, I'll end my testimony. Thank you so very much. Be happy to answer any questions that you might have. And with that, my staff member, Judy Signet, may have some words. Mr. Chairman?
Judy, go ahead.
My name's Judy Signet, for the record. I was one of the people. I wasn't the only one, but I was one of the people who was talking about this during the last interim before I went to him and asked him if I could get it drafted. And we thought that the legislature was beginning to lose its institutional memory. And one way of keeping the institutional memory around is to allow those of us that are retired out of, I happen to have retired out of General Executive Department State Service, but I had worked here at the legislature many times. And so I had dual knowledge of state government and how it works and also how the legislature works. So I kind of fell into the job 2 years ago. And discovered that I was severely limited when the session ran as long as it did. And basically what happened to me and happened to many other people was that we had to become your volunteer. Mm-hmm. And we discussed that problem and said, well, is there a solution? And we went looking at the ORS and said, well, there's been a solution for other folks. Why shouldn't, legislative staff who have an indeterminate length of service because of the length of the session be covered by the same rule? And that was the genesis of the bill. If you've got any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer them.
Just a couple comments. I wanted to work this today. I want to get the Ways and Means referral taken off, because I think that I understand from Mr. Delaney this ain't going to cost the fund anything. So there's no reason not to. And I want to make one more comment. The fine men and women, I think it's all men this year that protect us here, many of them are retired, all of them, I think, are retired state police officers, except for the ones on full duty. And today's their last day because they scheduled them. They don't know how long the session's going to run. So if they go over a certain amount, they have to rotate them out anyway. So we would avoid that. Now, some of them may not like that. They'd rather go fishing, I heard. Just a couple of them. I want to join them, too. But, but that's a good example of how we could avoid that hassle and not screw up your pension just because you want to stay here and do all this fun work with us. So, anyway, any comments or questions for these nice folks? But I am very supportive of this bill. And I want to get that referral removed, send this to the floor, and get it on its way.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No other questions?
No, just a comment. I wonder why we didn't do this sooner. So.
Exactly.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Anybody else want to testify to House Bill 3361 today? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing in House Bill 3361 and open. I'm going to open the full Committee on Business and Labor and open a public hearing on House Bill 2783. Thank you, Representative, for your patience.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Chip Shields, please. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chip Shields, State Representative, District 43, North and Northeast Portland. House Bill 2783 is good for business, and I thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving it a hearing today. It is particularly good for small owner-operated and family-owned businesses in which one or two people handle every aspect of the business's daily operations. House Bill 2783 extends the window for renewal and non-renewal of workers' compensation policies from 30 to 45 days. Today, if an insurance company chooses not to renew a workers' comp policy at the anniversary date, or if it must renew at terms less favorable to the business, current statute requires 30 days' notice before coverage under an existing policy expires. House Bill 2783 moves that notice window from 30 to 45 days. This expansion in the window is a modest yet significant increase to make life just a little bit easier for businesses, and particularly the small business person who might otherwise have to drop everything in order to search for a new carrier. This bill gives that business owner a little more breathing room. This bill builds off the advance we made last session with passage of House Bill 2719, which expanded the window from 30 to 45 days for commercial liability policies, general liability policies. The industry is supportive of this expansion in part because it makes sense to move towards uniformity in the notification requirements, and I thank Sean Miller of Liberty Northwest and Chris Davies of SAFE for coming together to help move this forward. I think at least one of them will be testifying shortly as well. I also thank John Schiltz at the Workers' Compensation Division and his staff at DCBS for their assistance and support. The agency is supportive of this concept because it furthers their efforts to ensure that businesses have the appropriate opportunity to leave the assigned risk pool to the usually less expensive voluntary market. They conducted a well-done and extensive study on the subject over the interim, and this bill will complement their efforts. It has also been endorsed by the Management Labor Advisory Committee. And I'd like to also thank Chris Edwards and the chair for signing on as co-sponsors of the bill. If I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to explain the Dash 1 amendment that I have before you that has been agreed upon by me and the industry. The Dash 1 amendment allows the carrier to cancel for cause most likely non-payment, if somebody's not paying their bill, for cause at 10 days, which I believe is a reasonable request suggested by the industry. Mr. Chair, some of you may have seen news reports over the last couple of years that indicate small business owners in Oregon feel more upbeat about the supportiveness of the state's business environment than do small business owners in California and Washington, and this is based on NFIB surveys. This bill represents a modest yet significant increase in the window to make life just a little bit easier for businesses in Oregon. It will help us continue to improve the state's business environment. And I respectfully request, Mr. Chair, that when you get to work session on this, and I understand that's not going to be today, that you vote the Dash 1 amendments into the bill and send the amended version to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. If you want to just bear with us for a second, I'd like to call John Schultz and Sean Miller up, and then we'll open questions to all of you.
Great.
Please. Whoever wants to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John Schultz with the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'll be very brief as Representative Shields has covered most of my planned testimony. I would just mention reiterate what Representative Shields did note, that the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee reviewed HB 2783 and voted to support the bill as drafted. I knew there were amendments coming on this bill, and the Management Labor Advisory Committee has discussed the amendments, but they have not yet voted on them for a recommendation, and it is scheduled to be looked at again on April 20th, at their next meeting. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Go ahead, Sean. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent Liberty Northwest, and we are here today in support of House Bill 2783 with the Dash 1 amendments. We've been working with Representative Shields actually for about 2.5 years, because last session Representative Shields passed a bill that did the same thing, extended the window from the notice requirement from 30 days to 45 days on liability coverage with a law. Also the 10-day for non-pay. And so this bill actually just mirrors on the workers' comp line exactly what we did last session. So we worked together last session, and this mirrors that. Again, Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendment has not been actually officially approved by the Management Labor Advisory Committee. We will be there all together to get that done, hopefully before the next work session. Thank you.
And thank you. If they're going to hear it on April 20th, we only have 4 hearing days or work sessions, I think, on House bills left. So let's make sure we know immediately and don't let this slip away. That's the only request I have. Any questions of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much, Representative. Guys. Anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2783 today? Mr. Gilliam, come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Gilliam, representing Northwest Grocery Association. We support this bill. I want to hear from the business community, particularly for our small and independent grocers out there. This is an important piece for workers' comp, and it's a real positive piece for the businesses.
Thank you. We have a whole bunch of good bills for business this year, Mr. Gilliam. And I'm sure you're aware of all those.
I appreciate that.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much. All right. Well, if no one else would like to testify, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2783. And I'm going to skip down to open work session on House Bill 2901.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2901 changes the collateralization procedures and requirements for deposits of public funds. We first heard this bill on March 28th. You have in front of you a Dash 2 amendment, which was discussed at the first hearing. It makes technical changes regarding the virtual collateral pool system and reporting requirements, and also requires banks that participate in what's called the Certificate of Deposit Account Registry Service Program to collateralize public funds held pending investment in certificates of deposit throughout the system. There's currently a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the measure. However, we have received permission from the Speaker to remove that.
Great. Is there a sign-up sheet?
No. We just want a work session, Mr. Chair.
So, excuse me. Does anyone want to come and describe need to describe?
Mr. Chair, we do have representatives from the from the Treasurer's Office and the Bankers Association.
Yeah, I'd appreciate if they'd come on up and just describe the amendment, and then we'll take care of business. State your names, gentlemen, for the record. And
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. The amendments that you have before you, we worked, Ken and I and Council of DOJ worked on, they just correct a number of technical, omissions and oversights in the original drafting of the bill. The most substantive change is there's a date inserted into a notification requirement for the Treasury to notify the institutions so that they can appropriately collateralize. And there is the change that Teresa mentioned relative to the CDRS program, where currently when we passed the legislation last time, apparently we wrote it to allow a window of opportunity for funds to be uncollateralized, and as I think Tim can attest, that was never the intent when we brought the legislation forward last time. So now we're taking this opportunity to plug that hole. That's what the amendments do.
Just for the record, you're referring to Dash 2 amendments.
The Dash 2 amendments,
great.
Yes.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. When I look to the left and look to the right, I'm the eye candy here on this panel, so I'm happy to get called up. You also have representatives from the county treasurers in the back that are very supportive of the bill and as of the amendments. But if there are any specific questions about that, I would defer to OBA counsel Ken Sherman.
All right, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ken Sherman, and I'll just say that we've had a very collaborative process working not only on the bill but on these Dash 2 amendments. The Oregon Bankers Association is in full support of the amendments.
Great. Any questions of these handsome gentlemen here before us today? All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion for the Dash 2 amendments.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chair, that we move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2901.
Representative Smith moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2901. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? All right, so moved. Representative?
I will move that we move House Bill 2901 as amended to the floor.
And rescind
the subsequent referral to Ways and Means to the floor with a group pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves we rescind the referral to Ways and Means on House Bill 2901 as amended, and move House Bill 2901 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please.
Aye.
Excused.
Vice Chair
Escobar. Excused.
Vice Chair
Olby. Excused.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative
Aye. Does anyone want to volunteer to carry this bill?
I would think Mr. Representative Butler should carry the bill.
Well, I'll talk to him, but I'll carry it if he's not available. All right, I'm going to close this work session at House Bill 2901. And now, thank you for your patience, folks. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2471. Teresa?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2471 directs the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to issue a tobacco vending license to qualified persons upon the application and payment of fee, and prohibits the sale of tobacco products unless the retailer obtains the license. It also prohibits the sale of tobacco products under minors, and requires vendors to request identification from persons who appear to be younger than 26 years of age, and also to post notices concerning the prohibition of sales to minors. It also permits the OLCC to suspend or revoke the tobacco vending license, prohibits sales of tobacco products that are not in its original open, unopened package or container, and also grants the OLCC the rulemaking authority and certain powers to implement and enforce provisions of the measure. And the bill takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die.
I'm going to call Alan Comp, please, Mr. Comp. And thank you for your patience. I know you were at the top of the list, but we had to move some things around. Whenever you're ready, sir, just identify yourself for the record.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of this committee, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to come before you to testify on House Bill 2471. My name is Alan Kampf. My brother Steve and I own ANS Marketing, Inc., a family-owned business for about 85 years. Our business started buying from R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company April 8 of 1926. That's 81 years ago this year. For me, this year will start 43 years with my company. In my opinion, the state of Oregon has unknowingly opened up Pandora's box. Our state has allowed just about anybody to get a license to stamp cigarettes and sell other tobacco products. A good friend of mine once told me that government is a process, not an event. Well, in my opinion, House Bill 2471 needs to be an event. The process has lasted 42 years since 1965, and what is going on today is what we have to show for it. In my opinion, the state has to regain control by licensing. In my opinion, the purpose of this bill, we need to make some changes to bring more revenue. The purpose of this bill is to bring more revenue to the state of Oregon from the licensing fees, to aid in the administration of this commodity, to support the efforts of the Tobacco Task Force to reduce crime, and to increase the MSA payments to the state of Oregon. To accomplish this, we need the following amendments made to this bill. Anyone with a past or current criminal tobacco conviction, or who has a history of noncompliance or is related to the applicant, owner, or officer, cannot hold a current or future cigarette or tobacco license of any kind. Only distributors, number two, only distributors can stamp cigarettes and purchase untaxed tobacco products. To be a distributor, you must be on direct, that means purchasing from at least three of the following manufacturers: R.J. Reynolds, Philip Morris, Commonwealth, Liggett Vector, and Lorillard. Currently, we have retailers stamping cigarettes and retailers buying untaxed products from the manufacturer. Number three, if a distributor's license has not been used for a period of 30 days without just cause, the license will be suspended. Four, all distributors, wholesalers, and retailers will be licensed annually. Monies collected go to funding the Tobacco Task Force. I suggest that the license for a distributor costs $1,000 a year, wholesalers $250, and retailers $100. Number five, a holder of an Oregon license of any kind, whether it be a distributor, wholesaler, retailer, cannot purchase for resale any cigarettes that have already been sold at retail and had the stamps removed to be sold again. The MSA payments are bypassed. There's a handout that we have, and it shows the Cigar Cartel, a company out of Sun Valley, California, that buys cigarette products from the low-tax state like Kentucky and Virginia. They go to retail stores that have retail buy-downs from the manufacturer. They gather up as much as they can. They bring it west, and they manually take off the stamps, and they resell the product. They restamp it, and you have a piece of paper that says, it shows a customer, a client that's been approached by them to purchase their product. And also, you'll see also that they've offered to sell me the same product. The interesting thing is that they have a tobacco tax license to stamp cigarettes for the state of Oregon. Therefore, the state of Oregon is not getting any of the MSA money. And here's another thing. This is from Alexandria, Virginia. I called them myself. I got this on the fax. They wanted me to buy products. I called them up and say, how much can I buy? They say, all you want. I said, will you report this, what I purchased, to the state of Oregon Department of Revenue? They said no. The other thing, so that's another reason why they should be licensed. I think it's ironic that the Cigar Cartel can stamp cigarettes for the state of Oregon. All licensed Oregon, number six, all licensed Oregon wholesalers and retailers must purchase all cigarettes and other tobacco products from a licensed Oregon distributor. If caught doing otherwise, you lose your license for 60 days. To make all this happen, all current licensed distributors and wholesalers must renew their licenses by July 31 of 2007. This gives all current license holders time to be compliant with this bill. Another reason this bill is very important is because of the other article I sent you all have. The people in this article are customers of mine, and I would like to think that if all retail stores were licensed, they would think twice about doing illegal cigarette and tobacco transactions out of fear of losing their license to do business. I want to thank Representative Butler for sponsoring this bill. I can only hope that you will see that you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee will see value in what I have said. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Camp. Any questions of Mr. Camp? All right, sir. I'll call you back up for the next bill, so if you know, I'm going to call some other folks up that have a different perspective.
And
we'll hear what they have to say, all right?
Absolutely.
Thank you. But first, I'm going to call Karen Wheeler from Department of Human Services. And, folks, I've been neglecting my duty here. If you have any phones or Blackberries or pagers or anything on, please shut them off. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Wheeler, and I'm the Addictions Policy Manager for the Addictions and Mental Health Division, Department of Human Services. I'm here today to provide testimony on House Bill 2471. The SINAR Amendment is a federally mandated program that requires the department to conduct random, unannounced inspections of a sample of tobacco retailers each year. We have to report to the Center for Substance Abuse Prevention on progress of lowering the percentage of merchant noncompliance with our tobacco sales laws. Failure to comply with this requirement can result in a loss of federal funds to the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Block Grant that our agency administers. For this reason, the department favors steps that would reduce tobacco sales to minors. The bill has the following provisions that might help reduce tobacco sales to minors. The bill would require all retailers to be licensed. This would allow enforcement personnel to know exactly where tobacco is being sold. The list generated through this licensure program will include only tobacco retail outlets. Current lists include bars, taverns, and other age-restricted establishments that are not inspected for compliance. This bill would eliminate the need to filter current lists to exclude non-tobacco selling retail outlets. House Bill 2471 will hold tobacco retailers accountable for sales to minors. Current Oregon law allows for citing only the retail clerk for sales to minors, while allowing owners and managers to take no responsibility for their clerk's actions. This bill would hold owners responsible by suspending or revoking their license to sell tobacco for violation of this bill. The department has one concern with House Bill 2471, and that's in Section 16. Section 16 would move the coordination of random unannounced inspections from the Department of Human Services and place those responsibilities with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Subsection 2 of Section 16 further refers to rulemaking in regard to Section 1921 Public Law 102-321-1992. That's the SINAR amendment. This amendment requires Oregon to lower the use of the sale of tobacco to minors to below 20%, or risk losing 40% of the state's substance abuse prevention and treatment block grant. In Oregon, this amounts to over $6.5 million per year that would not go toward prevention and treatment efforts for addiction services. The bill does not specify how the coordination of inspections by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission would address the requirements of the SINAR Amendment. Because federal funding for addiction services is dependent in part on SINAR Amendment compliance, the department would like to maintain responsibilities for tobacco inspections. Accordingly, we propose that the changes the bill proposes in Section 16 be deleted. Thank you, and I'm available for any questions if you have them.
Any questions of Ms. Wheeler? All right. Thanks a lot. I'm going to call Richard Kosasan, Joe Gilliam, and Mark Nelson.
Mark's already left. Go ahead and get going, guys, whenever you're ready. To get weepy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Richard Costasan, and I represent the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association, which is an organization made up of primarily small, independent, convenience stores throughout the state. And we would like to express our opposition to 2471 for a variety of reasons. It has been suggested that retail establishments should be subject to a $100 retail licensing fee, but the bill as constructed leaves that very open-ended. Section 4 language, specifically subsection 2, the commission shall set the fees at a rate such that the aggregate of monies received from licensing fees is adequate to pay the cost of administering the licensing program established by the Act and the cost of enforcing and investigating violations of the laws. Our experience has been over the years, as the previous speaker alluded to, DHS does a quite thorough job in terms of inspection of retailers, specifically at the retail level. This is, I think, a duplication of that effort, although one may argue it's a change from DHS to OLCC. We believe it is duplicatory and very, very costly. We take a small owner of a chain of 40 or 50 stores. $100 per store is fairly significant. And again, that is not spelled out. Long-term concern would be tying a tobacco license, newly created, with a license for the sale of alcohol, beer, and wine at retail. If those two down the road were to merge for an inadvertent sale to a minor, one could jeopardize either the OLCC license for the sale of alcohol or jeopardize the sale at retail. And when you look at the marketing at the independent convenience stores, if one were to discontinue or prohibit, hold in abeyance the sale of alcohol, tobacco products, that would have a very, very severe impact on those retailers. As drafted, again, we don't believe 2471 is precise and on point. The authorities granted the commission, specifically with language starting in Section 8, we believe is overly broad. Might point out language in Section 9, I think, is very problematic. Section 9, subsection 4, tobacco products may not be sold or delivered through mail. I would contend that that is an express violation of a couple of laws, but specifically the Interstate Commerce Clause. The question in terms of sales through mail, I think the operative question is a question of taxation, and I believe we have adequate protections to assure that the tax is paid in terms of those sales through mail. With that, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to try to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Gilliam, representing the Northwest Grocery Association. In the past, we're going to be in opposition to 2471, really for the same reasons in the past when it has come up. I heard two different things today. One was a concern about minor sales. One was a concern about wholesale issues between the gentleman's business and some of the manufacturers and retailers. On the minor side, it's currently we don't see enforcement of the current laws. And we aren't really in favor of putting more enforcement on us or a new license and new fees and a new bureaucracy when we don't have any enforcement of tobacco and possession laws. You see kids today, and unfortunately police officers walk right by a 16-year-old smoking and don't do a thing about it. There's no fear there. We know that most of the cigarettes they get it from friends, adults, or they steal them from their parents. And that's really where most of the tobacco comes from, and there's no enforcement. Now, in alcohol, the kid's standing on the corner, 16-year-old standing there with a beer, the cops would be all over it. They just don't do that with cigarettes. They also don't prosecute
the fines against clerks today. There's a stiff penalty, and they don't take it seriously in the courts today. So we would be in opposition to 2471. In terms of the wholesale issues, I think he has some market issues that are inappropriate to be solved in this bill that he needs to work out in terms of an open marketplace.
Any questions of these gentlemen? All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. All right, anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2471 today? All righty, then. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2471. I'm opening the public hearing on House Bill 2502. Teresa?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2502 prohibits wholesalers and retailers from selling cigarettes and other tobacco products below the actual wholesale cost or below the actual retail cost, except with the approval from the Department of Revenue or in the case of a rebate or a concession in specified circumstances. It makes a contract that violates provisions of the measure illegal and void. The measure permits the Department of Revenue or other persons injured by the violation of the measure's provisions to maintain an action of for damages or for injunction. It also grants the Department of Revenue the power to administer the measure, to set preemptive wholesale costs and presumptive retail costs, and to also approve the sales below presumptive wholesale costs and presumptive retail costs.
Thank you. Mr. Camp, come on up again, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. So that you will understand the importance of this bill, you will need to have a quick history lesson. Our state started stamping cigarettes, I believe it was July of 1965. At that time, the tax was 40 cents per carton. Today, it is $11.80. There are expenses that encompass the stamping operations for collecting the tax for the state. The stamping machines, the electricity, the rental of the machine, which you have a paper that shows Meyer Court increases on an annual basis. Today we're at $6,803.64 a year for the rental of the machine. The salary of the machine operator, cost of money to borrow from the bank to purchase cigarette stamps. Also the cost of money to floor the stamped inventory, and also bad debts. And I say bad debts because I don't mind losing my cost of goods and my profit, but I've already paid the state of Oregon their money in advance, and I lose that also. Also, the cost of insurance to cover for fire and theft, to cover the tax. This bill allows us for the first time a way to cover these expenses. Also, please note the governor's new proposed cigarette tax would change the cost of a roll of stamps from $35,400 to $60,750. I must also add that my testimony in regards to this bill would be different if that bill should pass for the governor. There is one amendment that I would like to see added to this bill, and that is regarding one of the other documents called the Schedule A that you see here, that you have. This idea of the Schedule A all started with a conversation with a gentleman named Roger Randolph, who was with the Department of Revenue, and he was talking about 50% of the tobacco task force was eliminated. And I got to thinking of another way to fund the tobacco task force. And that is, what you see, that Schedule A is a report that all distributors are supposed to file, and it tells on a daily basis the cigarettes and thousands of cigarettes what we received. And as you can see, there is 13,730,000 individual cigarettes were purchased by my company in February of 2007. And if you divide that by 200 sticks of cigarettes per carton, that rounds to 68,650 cartons. And I'm just going to pick a figure of $20, 20 cents a carton. That amounts to $13,730, and you multiply that times 12 months of the year. That's $164,760 that if this bill were passed, that just my little company would contribute to the tobacco task force that kind of money to sustain and bring it back to full strength. I feel that this is very, very necessary. As I mentioned earlier, the tax evasions that are going on, the retailers that are purchasing tobacco products from Little Brown Smoke Shop, which is a federal Indian reservation, in Washington State, a lot of unmarked other tobacco products, the 65%, is commingled with the retail stores, and no one knows the difference. You cannot begin to know how much the state is losing from the cigar cartels of the world, from the Little Brown Smoke Shop, and from, if you read this article, some of my customers that are mentioned in here of what they've done. We've known about it for a long time, but nothing has been done. And that's also why licensing is required, because the retailers would not do that if they knew they were going to lose their license to sell tobacco products. They would be out of business then. Once again, I want to thank Representative Butler for giving me this opportunity to have him sponsor this bill for me. And I also hope that you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee will see the need for this long overdue bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Camp? All right. Thanks a lot, sir. Appreciate it. Thanks for waiting so late in the afternoon.
Thank you all very much.
Jim Gardner, Richard Cosan, Joe Gilliam, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, appearing today on behalf of Philip Morris. It's a true pleasure to be before this committee again. The last occasion was our happy kumbaya moment on FireSafe, which has now happily made it all the way through the Senate and awaiting a signing ceremony by the governor. We oppose this bill. The reason is kind of an interesting issue. Legislation which establishes a minimum markup, a minimum margin for wholesalers or retailers, is really a kind of reverse price control bill. It's a price increase mandate. When a state artificially raises or mandates a kind of a thicker margin than the market would provide, it has the effect of disincenting distribution through the fully taxed conventional channels of distribution and increases the risk of diversion of demand into internet sales, Indian reservation sales, sales that originate in lower tax jurisdictions. In our case, Idaho is the most significant of those. It has an effect economically very similar to the effect of an excessive excise tax increase, but there is a crucial difference, because in the case of a minimum price provision, the state doesn't get any revenue out of it. That's just margin that's going either into the wholesalers or the retailers. So it actually has economically the effect of threatening or depressing the yield of the current tax with no benefit to the state. And for that reason alone, this is poor public policy. This would also turn the Department of Revenue into a kind of mini public utility commission, because if you wanted to deviate from the mandated markup, you'd have to go to the PUC and file what amounts to a rate case and get their permission to drop prices below what the statutorily mandated margins would be. Well, somebody's got to pay for all that bureaucracy, for all that rate-setting exercise. Department of Revenue doesn't have that in their budget now. There's no funding mechanism specified here, so the default would have to be general fund to pay for that. Now, with the exception of Nevada, none of our neighboring states have this kind of program in effect. Washington had it in effect and then repealed it in 1986. And I want to read to you the policy statement that Washington adopted. The legislation repealing the law in 1986 in Washington stated, "It is the policy of the legislature to encourage competition and in the role and reduce government's role in price setting. It is the legislature's intent to leave price setting mainly to the forces of the marketplace." That, Mr. Chairman, I submit, is sage advice from our neighbor to the north.
Mr. Kosasan.
Thank you, Mr. Schaffler. Richard Kosasan with the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association. I had some written testimony, but until I can get the heading of the right committee and the right chairman, I think I might withhold that written testimony, and I will, after maybe a couple of edits, produce that written testimony to Ms. Van Winkle. The Oregon Neighborhood Store Association, again, is here in opposition to House Bill 2502. We believe it would substantially impact artificially the market in terms of which our members work and function on a day-to-day basis. I wholeheartedly agree with Mr. Camp. Oregon does indeed, and I think we can demonstrate very clearly, that there is a tremendous amount of tax evasion going on and has gone on in recent years. The biggest problem and the major cause of that is the relatively high tax rate that Oregonians pay in terms of bordering states, states nationally. According to the Department of Revenue, for example, approximately, I think it was 4 years ago, the Department of Revenue put in writing that they believe approximately a third, about $100 million a year, is lost in legitimate tax revenues otherwise due this state. So in terms of addressing that, I would wholeheartedly encourage the committee to look at that and look at that very hard. The Tobacco Tax Compliance Task Force, I think, is a very good start. I think they have made progress, but I think they could make a tremendous amount of additional progress in terms of trying to capture and recapture lost revenue. Part of this debate centers on, I think, a protection of retailers and wholesalers, and I would leave with the committee a copy of the Robinson-Patman Act, which was a federal act devised specifically to address protections, antitrust issues. In terms of states, a move by the state of Oregon is not preempted by that act, I should make clear, but I think it would be very duplicative in terms of administration of some type of regulatory scheme like this. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Any questions of these gentlemen today? Well, you know, this old fellow named Joe that used to hang out in the tavern in my old neighborhood, and he's always bragging about how he got all his cigarettes on the internet, and he didn't pay any Oregon taxes, but it didn't matter, he couldn't take it with him. Old Joe, you hate to hear this, but he died of cancer a few months ago, so if there's any children watching, quit smoking. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Have a good day. Anybody else want to testify on House Bill 2502? Mr. Camp, you want to come up and respond just briefly, please?
I'll make it very brief.
It's late in the afternoon.
I know that.
And you're doing good. And I apologize keeping you here so late.
No, I'll do it very quickly. There are a list of states that have the same thing I just proposed. It's called the Unfair Sales Act, and they call it the Unfair Sales Law, Presumptive Markup, Premium Price Sector. As of January 2007, there it is. And the state of Oregon does get something out of this, because if I can cover my expenses properly, I will employ all my people, I will make some margins of profit, the retailers will make profits, and the state of Oregon will gain in tax revenue from it, and everybody will still be working. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for staying so late in the afternoon, too. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2502. I will open a work session on House Bill 2556. Teresa?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2756 was a Business and Labor Committee bill at the request of the Management and Labor Advisory Committee. It changes the time frame for the provision of compensable medical treatment within the workers' compensation system by physician assistants, naturopaths, podiatrists, and chiropractors. We first heard this bill on March 28th, and we also discussed the Dash 2 amendment in front of you, which has been approved by AMLAC as well as the original measure. The amendment, to refresh your memory, modifies the time frames for the care providers to serve as an attending physician. It requires that a medical service provider must certify they've reviewed the materials provided by the Department of Consumer and Business Services prior to providing compensable medical services or authorizing temporary disability benefits, and also adds an emergency clause effective on passage. And there is a minimal fiscal impact on the amendment.
And did we go over the second dash two slash?
Yes, time? Mr. Chair, we did. But we do have John Schultz from the Workers' Comp Division.
Why did we wait?
Mr. Chair, there were some questions about the amendment. So
did everybody get their questions answered?
Yep.
Does anyone need any more explanation on this bill?
Nope.
All right, then. In that case, I need someone. I'll entertain a motion to move the dash twos. Yes. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2756.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2756. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Objection? All right. So moved. Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2756 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2756 to the floor with the due pass as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. I expressed some concerns about some what I thought were inconsistencies in this bill in the first hearing. I have since been satisfied by talking to several people that this is a step in the right direction, and I am satisfied it's a good bill and pleased to vote for it today.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had concerns that, I really wanted, I stepped very carefully anytime we start talking about workers' compensation, and we have a very good system, I think, here in the state. So I wanted a chance to do a further review of the study, and after looking at that and talking with the folks from the department, I feel very comfortable with this.
Thank you. Very good. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Excused.
Vice Chair Scobell.
Excused.
Vice Chair Holby.
Excused.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Chair Southwick.
Aye. Anyone want to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative Rosenbaum, you're
thank
very
you.
Generous.
I'd be happy to.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 2756. Anything for the good of the order? All right. Everyone have a good weekend. We'll stand adjourned.